Welcome to this online interview by Project Cargo Weekly. Our special guest of honor today is Mr. Etienne Vassallo. He is an oil and gas logistics consultant with Al Ajal in Tripoli Company Limited in Libya. And he's a good friend of mine, actually a native of Malta. First and foremost, Etienne, welcome to this interview.
Thank you, Bo. It's good to be here.
You're always welcome. Let me start a little bit like I always do with asking you, as I do with everyone else, how did you end up in oil and gas logistics and how did you end up in Libya of all places?
Yeah, okay. Well, my background in working in Malta was mostly shipping, logistics and land transportation by trader from Europe. Mm-hmm. And after, you know, many years of that, this opportunity came to me to work in Libya, primarily exploration. That's how I started off there. So it's seismic, okay. Basically.
Okay.
And from there, slowly, so this was in 2005. So I've been in Libya now for the past 17 years. And I've, you know, I've done a bit of everything, let's call it this way. But my current position is as a logistics offshore and manpower director with Al Ajal Oil Services. Mm-hmm. And we handle projects, manpower, you know, whenever there's some shipments coming, I normally direct people to the right forwarders, because many people look at Libya as, you know, volatile, which is true. I mean, there has been in the past years, mm-hmm. some turbulent, you know, times where it wasn't very stable. But recently, things are improving. Hopefully, we will at some point this year have the election, so that at least there will be one government to govern this country, this oil-rich country. And,
the reason why I really felt happy that you have time for this interview is because Libya is a kind of unknown quantity for most of us. I mean, all we know is, say, Libya, the only thing you know is oil and Gaddafi. And most of the people have no clue about what goes on there. Put it in context for our viewers here, Etienne, a few geographics. The country is pretty big and the population is small, and it has sizable oil reserves, isn't so?
Yes, right now they are producing around 1 million barrels a day. So they're basically half of what they were producing pre-Revo. Mm-hmm. The population of Libya is 5 million. So when you consider the revenue that comes, especially with the current price of the barrel right now, it could be a very rich country. For example, Nigeria, you know, they produce more, but the population is 80 million. So,
of course, yes,
you know,
it puts it in context. But what are the main ports being used if we think here shipping in and out of the country, Etienne?
I would say three main ports, which is Benghazi, mm-hmm. El Qoms, which is an hour away from Tripoli, mm-hmm. and Tripoli port.
Okay.
And there's also Misurata, which is very close to El Qom. So really and truly, you know, it's basically three, but you can say four. Let's put it this way.
Right. And there are regular shipping lines coming into Libya?
Yes, right now, yes. I mean, okay. they've all started. I mean, we're hoping that even the airlines now, you know, some other airlines will also start to resume their flights to Libya, international, I'm saying.
Yes.
Because right now we're a bit restricted to basically Tunisia and Istanbul with the local airlines. But there are talks that at some point more airlines will be resuming their flights there.
Okay, so I suppose on a political standpoint, the Turkish are very active in Libya, I believe, right?
Yes. Especially on the west side.
Right. From another historical point of view, can you elaborate a bit on the history, not too long, of course, but just a couple of minutes, on the good relationship between Malta and Libya? How does that come about? I mean, Malta, we all know, is a safe, so as much as can be here in Europe, safe country, and a good location in the Med. But how come it has special relations to Libya?
Well, in the past, I would say in the 80s, one of the prime ministers of Malta, Don Mintov, had very close ties with Gaddafi at the time.
Okay.
In fact, I remember during my days in the secondary school, the Arabic was compulsory, the Arabic language. And at the time, I used to say, why am I learning Arabic? Little did I know that I'm going to spend, you know, half of my life working there.
Wow.
So yes, the ties were quite well. And then when the sanctions hit Libya because of the Lockerbie thing, Malta was kind of the only country whereby the Libyans could take two vessels, Toletel and Garnata at the time they were called. Mm-hmm. And they used to sail to Malta to buy chocolates and pasta and rice and whatever they needed and sail back. In fact, during those times, a lot of Maltese companies made a fortune, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So the relationship was quite close between the Libyan people and the Maltese. And they always respected Maltese workers working in Libya, you know. So the ties were very good.
Okay. Now, I remember when I as you know yourself, I used to live in Malta between 2003 and 2006, and I actually had the one chance as part of a Finnish government delegation to visit Tripoli at that time. And I saw by my own eyes that coming out of Malta and staying at Corinthia Hotel, and the relationship was very good. And there were several flights from Malta to Libya in those days. So of course, when you go back to Libya now, can you fly direct from Malta, or is it now must be via Istanbul? Or
there was a time whereby there was a company called Medavia who was chartering a smaller aircraft directly to Matika, which used to take 50 minutes. But now they suspended this flight. So going to Tripoli, you have to go either via Istanbul or via Tunis.
Okay, so that's what you mentioned earlier. And 17 years in Libya, I mean, I'm very impressed. I mean, does it mean that you speak and understand?
Yes, as I said, we had to learn Arabic way back in the secondary, so that helps. But obviously, when you spend all that time there and you're talking all the time with them, the Arabic language kind of... Plus, let's not forget, the numbers in Maltese are similar to the Arabic.
I didn't think about that.
Okay. And there's also a few words here and there. The Maltese language is a mix of, you know, there's a bit of Italian in it, a bit of English, quite a lot of Arabic, you know.
Yeah.
So, yes, I mean, you pick it up quite quickly.
Okay. And the job that you do, you sometimes go out in the field. I mean, I must be honest to say, personally, I don't know much about where the oil is. Is it offshore? Is it inland? Or... does it mean you travel all over the country, which is still quite sizable?
Well, mostly what I do is I visit the oil companies in Tripoli.
Right.
Because you need to hold meetings with the head of departments to try and, one, see how things are going. Two, try to solve any problems which occur, which are, you know. And three, to try and... get more business. So it's partly also as business development.
Of course.
Now, when there is a project, sometimes, yes, I do travel to the fields.
Mm-hmm.
In Libya, you have offshore, which is mostly Eni, Mellitah Oil and Gas, you know, they own the most, platforms. And then there's onshore, mostly to the east, the fields are mostly to the east, Benghazi, I'm saying. But it's all over. And the business is right now, it's NOC oil companies, which is National Oil Corporation. We are hoping that when the country continues to stabilize and it becomes safer, the international oil companies will start to set foot as well, you know, like Occidental, Total, you know, older as BP.
Right, right. Now, but it's quite clear that you certainly have know-how and boots on the ground more than so many other books or newspapers you can read. If one would be interested to know a little bit more about Libya, is there any newspaper in English, if not Arabic, of course there is, but in English that you could follow to kind of understand what goes on in the country or how to find news online or about Libya?
Unfortunately, Bo, and this is unfortunate for people who work there because of their families, the media, the way they report news, especially about Libya, you know, it's a bit inflated.
Yeah.
It doesn't give the right message to people who are not there. And we see this because when we get in touch with foreign companies whom we would need to subcontract certain works and projects, the first thing they tell us is we are not prepared to send people to Libya. Because they would imagine that, you know, there's a war going on and blah, blah, blah. Mm. So unfortunately, if you go online, you are only going to see bad things about Libya.
Yeah.
Now, I cannot say that they were in bad times. And if I have to recall, the worst times, I would say, were between 2014 and 15, you know, where the situation really went south. But nowadays, I mean, I can say that, for example, for me to hold a half an hour meeting with an oil company, which is not more than 8-10 kilometers away, it takes me 3 to 4 hours because I'm always stuck in traffic.
Incredible.
Which, you know, it's just like in Egypt, you know. So that shows that all the people are out. There's nothing going on.
No.
There are still militias in place. Yes, I agree. But, you know, as long as no one...
No, I do see your point. I mean, there is a lot of media, fake media around. And I must also say that we all know from our experience that bad news sell more newspapers than good news.
Correct.
I mean, nobody wants to know that the people in Tripoli are doing well and it's come a long way since Gaddafi and come and enjoy the scenery, so to speak. Nobody wants to read about that. They want to have, scandal and disaster and whatnot. And it's... both Western and, shall we say, Eastern media, it's really, whom to trust nowadays? And you certainly have boots on the ground, not some journalist sitting in a boardroom in London writing something about Libya who hasn't been there, right?
Correct. And in certain areas where they are more remote, say, for example, south of Libya, where there's Ubari and Sebha, we have project works going on there because we do also pipeline construction.
Mm-hmm.
We provide our own security to ensure that any people we send, they are protected. Mm-hmm. And how do we go about that? The best way to go about that is, because I work with a local company, the first thing they do is, you know, Libya is very tribal. So the first thing we do is we go and meet the leaders of that tribe. And we employ people from them. So like that, you're always protected. These are the in and outs that certain foreign companies wouldn't know.
Yeah.
So, and then they will face issues, you know?
Yes.
So what I can offer to you, to the members of you know, of CLC and Project Weekly Cargo, is that if anyone is interested in doing something there, be it with projects, be it with procurement, be it with you know, shipping.
Yeah.
They can always go through me and I would give them my best suggestion or point them to the people I know they can trust and then they can take it from there, you know?
Yeah. No, I can only say, and I know you several years now from a mutual friend of ours on the island of Malta and we've met several times and I certainly know that you already do a lot of consultancy for highly reputable companies who trust you. So for those who are listening and viewing this interview, please make a note of that, because I do agree with you. They are none as blind as those who will not see. And listening to the media and being overly scared without reason develops nothing. So why not speak to people who actually are in the country, such as yourself? I mean... For you, you also know that in the media here in the West, there's been a lot of, all the immigrants coming out of Libya, and there's a lot of trafficking there and so on. Is that still an issue, or is that also being inflated?
No, I would say that that is true, because all these immigrants that make their way from sub-Saharan countries to Libya, what they do is they stay there, work, you know, collect the money, because, you know, they do the crossing. Their main target is Italy, so that then they infiltrate in Europe. But yes, it's not easy to control that.
No, I understand. How often do you, shall we say, shuttle between Malta and Libya? How is a work month or work week for you?
Normally, I spend about 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks in Libya, and then I come back to Malta and I spend a month here.
But okay.
The thing is, when you're in Libya, the Libyans are not like the Western people. They do not believe much in emails or these online meetings, you know. It's the physical contact, face-to-face meetings that gets you going.
Yes.
So I need to be there. But when I'm in Malta, then I just follow up with emails, you know.
Yes. It's funny you mention it. I was just in Qatar last week, and a friend of mine working in Qatar, he said, yeah, but you want to get some customers there, you have to go and say hello to them once a week. It's not like here in the West, you say hello once and then 3 months later you see again. You know, you have to hang in there, and you can't keep your hands clean all the time and not see people. You actually have to get your, shall we say, bottom out of your chair and go and see people.
Correct. And even the way when you meet them, it's not like we do, hi Bo, how are you? Listen, I need a favor, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, first you have to spend like the first 10, 15 minutes just talking about family and how are they doing and this, and then it's like, it's a culture, you know, and you have to respect that.
Yeah, definitely. But it's also, I believe, something that you can be, let's say, accustomed to. I mean, it's a friendly culture. People are friendly, and you can have friends for life in places like that, right?
Libya, I would say. I spent some time working in Hassin Moussoud in Algeria, and also in Tunisia. Mm-hmm. I was operating between Sfax and Gades. And if I have to say, the Libyans are the best of the lot. They are much friendlier.
Okay, wow. That's Libya is a Muslim country, but are they, how do we say, do we call it a normal Muslim, or are they some fanatics there too, or how is religion in that sense?
I would say that after the Gaddafi was, in my opinion, against these fundamentalists. And after the revolution, probably these fundamentalists or more fanatics were more seen than before, you know.
Right.
But in general, I wouldn't say it. I wouldn't compare it, for example, to Saudi or to Afghanistan, you know. Far from that.
Yeah. Okay. Very, very interesting. And do you have any plans? I mean, you're still a young man. Do you have any plans to retire in Malta, or are you going to buy that huge summer house in Libya with a good view to the Med?
Well, mentioning that, in Libya there's 1800 kilometers of beach. So,
oh wow, they must have some beautiful beaches there. I mean,
there are. Yes. it's unfortunate, or the culture for Libyans. For us, having a sea view apartment is you know, the ultimate thing to have, you know.
Yes.
For them, they would rather have what they call a farm, which is a massive piece of land, you know, outside of the city, in a quiet area where they can grow trees and you know, that's for them, that's the thing. The beach is not interesting for them.
Well, as you know, a traditional Westerner is immediately, especially for us here in the north of Europe, when the summer or whenever it's cold here, we rush to the south, you know.
Yeah.
So, but just a quick question here is one of the last. I mean, there must be, when the time is right, there must be an enormous tourism potential in the country, one would imagine.
I would think so, because when you look at the country as being so oil rich, you know, and having Mediterranean weather, all those beaches, you know, and it's got a lot of things to offer also. I mean, there's a lot of history and
yeah, exactly.
You know. So yes, if they get their acts together, I mean, yes, it could be better than Dubai, I would say, because weather-wise, you know, it's not as hot. I mean, we get 40 pluses in summer, but normally it's 20s and 30s, you know?
Yeah, oh yeah, very pleasant.
Which is fantastic.
Yeah, definitely. Very, very interesting, Etienne. I must say, really, it's the first time I've interviewed anyone that has boots on the ground, a specialism in Libya. And it's been really a pleasure. Formally, I want to say really many, many thanks to you for giving me time here in your R&R in Malta, where you are now. Telling us about Libya. Thank you for that, Etienne.
You're welcome, Bo, anytime.
Okay, and to all our listeners, viewers, and hopefully there are many of you around the world, this was another special interview by Project Cargo Weekly. Our guest of honor has been Mr. Etienne Vassallo. He is an oil and gas logistics consultant with Al Ajal Oil Services in Tripoli, Libya. And it's been interesting to hear about a country where most of us have no clue, I should say. Stay tuned for more interviews in the near future. Thank you.